You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Welcome on this brisk and fortunately unsnow-covered roads this morning. It was nice not to have to fight with whatever it was that was falling and blowing.
Good morning, West Hill. Oh, it's like a musical accompaniment.
He's buying all the pizzas for lunch.
He's buying all the pizzas for lunch, Greta says. Oh, so I'm here with your climate change minute. How many of you were here, well, at the other church, actually, on the day that we celebrated that the United Church had agreed to allow Greta and West Hill to remain part of the United Church? How many of you were there that day? Almost everybody, right? It was fabulous. It was a little bit longer service than usual because we were sharing with each other, and then there was the potluck, and then there was a Q&A after. So the point is, it was a longer time away from home than usual, and Rob was with me. Because he wanted to celebrate that too. And so we left our home around 9:30 and got back around 3, and we returned home to the sound of rain falling from our ceiling. Yeah, this is a little video I took. Yeah, that was the main floor, and then I have a 10-second of the basement. Nope. Yes, of course. Yes, yes. Yes, while we were gone, they also put some messy stuff on the floor in there. I don't know who did that. So I share this with you because the culprit was a very old toilet tank that had cracked open on the second floor and had been gushing water the whole time we were gone. And so I have been learning more about toilets than I ever wanted to know. And so I thought I'd share this with you. Share the joy. So your information, some facts. The toilets are the biggest clean water drain in North American households. Toilets. 30% of our clean drinking water is going down the toilet. And the average person flushes 2,000 times a day. Not a day. We hope not. A year. 2,000 times a year. And so why is this important? Because, of course, with climate change, we're creating drier conditions. The week after this happened, Sanjay Gupta on CNN did a big report on Texas, where they are, you know, the rivers are drying up there, and they showed all of these places where it's just sand now. And so they are doing something called toilet to tap, which is exactly what it sounds like. So they are cleaning the sewage and directing it right back into people's drinking water taps. So, and like South Africa and other places are coming to see what they're doing. So if we want to avoid that, which I would like to, we have some work to do. And I also found out some interesting new and upcoming things that are happening for places with less modern amenities. They have biodigesters, where it turns it into usable gases and manure. They have solar-powered self-cleaning in India. They have something called the crapper, not kidding. the crapper, and it's indoor composting with a spinning drum. And finally, they have the toilopreneurs, where they put toilets on rickshaws, and they empower women by giving them microloans to take the rickshaw toilets around, and they make money doing this. So that was kind of cool to find out all that was going on. Here in North America, we have more fancy choices. I have a little photo of one of the fancy choices. You can get a... Isn't that nice? Donald Trump's toilet. Yeah, that's what they say anyway. Toilet bidet with cyclone flush system and automatic open close seat will put you back $5,700.
Yeah, the first clue is Trump says there's no reading material.
There's no reading material. She said that's the first clue. It was Trump. There's no reading material. There's something called the OV Smart. And I loved their slogan. Their marketing slogan is, packed with features to make using the restroom the most enjoyable part of your day. Like, if that's the most enjoyable part of your day, then I'm feeling sorry for you. But they have a luxurious soft closing heated seat, deodorizing function, and remote control flushing. So there you go. For the rest of us who would be looking for closer to normal choices, they have something, an incinerating toilet. Their slogan is, only ash remains. They use electric heat to incinerate the waste. Waterless composting toilets, usually for more rural places. Getting closer to home, they have, and some of you have seen these, they have toilets where the lid is converted into a sink. And so when you wash your hands, the water that you use to wash your hands goes into the tank, and that gets used for the next flush. So that's an option that you can, and their slogan is, sink positive, which I really liked. And finally, of course, there's the low flow and the dual flush. Do you know what GPF stands for? I didn't. Gallons per flush. Gallons per flush. Older toilets waste as much as 6 gallons per flush. So those of us who don't speak gallon, that's almost 23 liters. So almost 12 two-liter pop bottles every time you flush the toilet. Like that. That's just astonishing to me. And so with the low flow, it's down to 1.6 gallons. And if you do dual flush, you can actually just do 0.8 if you use the smaller choice. And the other news is it will save you money. They say it's, if your toilet is pre-1980s, which ours definitely was. Ours was like 1956 or something. It would save you $230 a year if you switched out your toilet. And if your toilet is between 1980 and 1994, which probably many in this room would fall in that category, it's $140 a year that you would save if you switched it out. So that's your information. Your invitation is to buy low flush. You'll reduce your water bills, pays for itself. You'll lower your risk from old toilets. And they have lots of new features. And if you have an older toilet but you're not quite ready to switch it out, one suggestion I saw was to fill a container with pebbles and sand and put it in the tank away from the plumbing system. Because we live in a world where 2.6 billion people don't have a toilet. 2.6 billion people live without toilet facilities. Right? And no potable drinking water, and that, of course, also includes here in Canada. And we're flushing clean drinking water down the toilet. So I'll leave you with your inspiration. Three quick quotes. One, Benjamin Franklin said, only when the well is dry will we know the worth of water. Victor Webster said, everything we do, even the slightest thing we do, can have a ripple effect and repercussions that emanate. If you throw a pebble into the water on one side of the ocean, it can create a tidal wave on the other side. I don't know if that's actually scientifically true, but I like the concept. And I'll finish with a quote from Deb Ellis. May you always have clean water to drink. May it never rain from your ceiling. Offered as wisdom for the journey. May you walk in it.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
Greta had already seen the movie once, and I hadn't, so I pouted enough that she took me again, and I saw the movie with her. I'm so glad I did. If you haven't seen it, it is a heartwarming, heart-wrenching trip back in time. And when you walk out of the theater, you realize that much has not changed since those days. But I wanted to link it to our grounded, guided, and growing. We've been on this long and hard journey to the, with much criticism from many quarters, to ground ourselves in life itself, not an authoritative book, an authoritative person at all, but to ground ourselves in life, life as it is. And when you watch a movie like that and you realize the suffering in this world and you say, I'm grounded in this life with all its difficulties and all its challenges. This is life. And the suffering is real. And it's rampant. Well, I was thinking of a friend of mine from long, long ago who thought Archie Bunker was the hero of the program. If you remember, what was the name of the program? All in the Family. They thought, with all his prejudices and all his stereotypes, they thought he was right. They did not get the irony of the program, which was most troubling to me that they didn't get there. But I was thinking of where you drop off in the acceptance of everyone in that love. So we look at life and we apply love. So we're sitting, Greta and I are sitting in the movie. It's about to start. And two people walk in front of us whom we knew. And we know that they are from an evangelical Christian background. And they believe the Bible is absolutely the Word of God. So we watched the movie together, and I knew them well enough to know that they would be very outraged at the racism. We would have gelled on that. But as soon as another aspect of an ism came into the story, their approval would have dropped off because their book says it's wrong. And I thought, we all have a drop-off point. Where do we start? Okay, but not that. Not that kind of person, or not that. And that movie really made me realize it's when we say to love all, doesn't mean to approve of all, but to love all is such a demand, such a challenge for me. Because if you differ from me, I tend to think that you're wrong. And probably you do the same with me. But if we could expand that and say, okay, how can I open my heart to something I haven't been comfortable with? And talk about it. And hopefully a movie like that says something. Because I don't know if you're going to quote that particular quote, Greta, in that story. But when the main fella says, I'm not this, I'm not that, and you don't even think I'm this, then who am I? And we want to say, you are of worth and you are loved. And we want to grow in wisdom for that. So, and I'm just add very quickly, at the end of the service today, I've put the song that I called Token, that didn't want it to be a token song last week, but we're going to end with the hope that we shall overcome those isms and live as in one family.
Our first reading this morning is by Michael Crichton, The Lost Word. What makes you think human beings are sentient and aware? There's no evidence for it. Human beings never think for themselves. They find it too uncomfortable. For the most part, members of our species simply repeat what they are told and become upset if they are exposed to any different view. The characteristic human trait is not awareness, but conformity, and the characteristic result is religious warfare. Other animals fight for territory or food, but uniquely in the animal kingdom, human beings fight for their beliefs. The reason is that beliefs guide it at a time when our behavior may well lead us to extinction. I see no reason to assume we have any awareness at all. We are a stubborn, self-destructive conformist. Any other view of our species is just a self-congratulatory delusion. Next question. The second reading, Douglas Adams, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 92 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
So, Green Book, the movie that we're talking about today, is a book about going on a journey. And a lot of things happen on that journey, the most significant of which are that hearts are changed. So as I was preparing, I'm thinking about how we travel these days and what it is we run into, many of us, and whether or not that's really enough. There are places I visit where the sunlight shines from far above, where the days are always longer, even at their end. The sun kindling the horizon, first cloaking itself in a brilliant, massive glow, then stretched, unbroken, in its last farewell, its return assured as we take our rest. We are comfortable. All the conveniences a traveler needs, ready at the turn of a key. Dark roasted coffee brewed the way I like it. Water, distasteful, available for purchase in a jug. But what do I know of the places I visit? Of the people? Of their hopes and dreams? Don't I even bring myself all the way here from my hemisphere of safety, my world of the way things are, steady and sure? Move, girl, move. Find something destabilizing, something weird, or even catastrophe wrapped in mistake. Step off the curb at the wrong time. Look past the freshly painted facades, the neon reminders of a paid welcome. Without that single step, the one that leaves you wondering, where the hell am I? You will never be changed by the world's chaos and the gift of its crucial transformation. I want to tell you a little bit more about the readings before we actually get into the green room. The first reading by Michael Crichton, I had written a little bit of a bio about no, his bio that he had given, but I put a little bit of reference to it. I said, Michael Crichton's self-written bio on his website is a perfect example of attention deficit disorder of a magnitude that cannot be explained away by the acronym ADD. In fact, it seems the most riveting bio anyone might ever hope to have, if not exhausting. Now listen to this. Okay, when I was 15, I wanted to go to college and be a writer. When I was 20, I was in college and applying to go to medical school to be a doctor. When I was 25, I was in medical school, but I was going to quit when it was finished. When I was 30, I was a successful film director with my first film, Westworld, in release. When I was 35, I had almost decided I didn't want to direct anymore, but I wasn't sure what to do next. So I started a software company and did computer games. When I was 40, I really wanted to only direct movies and never write again. When I was 45, I had my first child and was happily writing and not interested in directing. I feel like my life has been very exciting and very unpredictable. I mean, is that not exhausting? Just thinking about that, right? Oh, I thought it was amazing. Anyway, the other one is Douglas Adams, and I wanted to share a little bit about him, too. The Lost World, The World Lost, an incredible thinker, writer, and champion for reason and a secular world, when Douglas Noel Adams, often referred to as DNA, perfect, died at the age of 49 years. His writing is best known for his 5-book trilogy, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, fertile ground for the skewering of many irrational beliefs and explanations for life. For example, Ford. There's an infinite number of monkeys outside who want to talk about this script for Hamlet they've worked out. Brilliantly clever. Another revered classic is the book The Meaning of Lift. Does anyone know The Meaning of Lift? Not many of us. Okay. So he co-wrote that with John Lloyd, and it's a book where he's taken all the names of the little towns and byways in England, and he's given them a definition, right? So and my favorite one, here's one. Dechant, that part of a hymn, usually a few notes at the end of a verse, where the tune goes so high or low that you suddenly have to change octaves to sing it. My personal favorite, and the one I often use, is a henny. Anyone know what a henny means? Do you remember? He's looking it up. A henny is the posture you assume when you're reading the spines of a book in a library on a shelf. I am standing a henny right now. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, brilliant beyond measure, this man. John Lloyd put out a newer version of The Meaning of Lift, and in it he said, I hope that you are thriving in some alternate universe, and because here you are deeply missed, and that's very true. So, I'm going to also go back to one of the quotes, but not a quote that was put up on the screens, a quote that was used in Green Book, the real Green Book. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about the real Green Book before we go ahead. The movie is named, as you know, those of you who have seen it, for a little book that was to help reduce the aggravation of vacations for black people in the United States. Once the vehicle, car, became popular, blacks found that it was often a good thing to own your own car because then you didn't have to take part in the segregated transit system and be treated in a fairly negative way, or you could expect to be treated in a negative way. And so many black people would buy cars and use them. And then, of course, the next thing that became obvious was you could get out of the city altogether and travel, go and see the rest of the country or wherever your tires could take you. But the reality was that it was not really an easy thing to do because across America, the cities and towns that one would want to go to visit had rules and had, you know, prejudices that were still solidly in place. And so if you went and you just walked up to a particular motel and said, we'd like to stay here for the night, you'd get the door slammed in your face if you were black. Or if you went into a restaurant, they'd point out the sign that says whites only. If you went to use a washroom someplace, there wouldn't be, we'd need that woman's innovative rickshaw traveling along beside so that you could take care of your physical needs. Blacks often packed their own food in their cars so that they didn't have to stop somewhere, and many times would drive long into the night without a place to actually stay being found. And so a guy whose first name I now forget, last name is Green, started collecting those places around the country where he had an experience of being welcome as a Black person. And so he wanted to make sure that other people would know of those things. There was also an Airbnb kind of thing that took place in that people would put out a rainbow of places across the state saying, you could stay here, this is my aunt this is my uncle that, my cousins live over there. And those names got listed so that people could phone ahead and get a room for the night, and they would be able to know that they would be welcome and they would get a meal. The book was published for many years, from the 1930s up to the 1950s, 60s, and it was made available to anyone who wanted it. The guy who put it together sought recommendations from across the country, and so quickly the number of places that one could stay would grow as people would add in information and they would be able to find a place to stay. So in the 1960s, when this movie, Green Book, is made, the two men are, they don't actually talk about the Green Book in the movie very much, but you see it on the front seat of the car, and at one point in time it's picked up and reviewed, and it's explained when it's handed over. But other than that, that's really about all that is said about it. I wanted to look at one of the quotes that's on the cover, and that's by Mark Twain. Now, if any of you have read Mark Twain stuff, you know he has like this incredible wit, not unlike Adams. Or, what's his name? I just said it. Yeah. And so he writes with this cracking wit about many, many things. Have any of you read Letters to Earth? Letters from Earth? No? Have you watched, is anyone watching Lucifer on TV these days? Hysterical. It's a hysterical show. Come on, guys. You've got to go home and watch Lucifer. It's very good. Anyway, Letters from Earth was written by Mark Twain decades before anyone thought of putting Lucifer on Earth in a comedy, tragicomedy, whatever it is, that we watch on Netflix. And the premise was that God had sent some angels down to Earth to report back how things were. And so the letters from Earth are the letters going back. And I could never use them here as for the service because they are hysterical. And they are the kind of wit that I can enjoy at home. And I invite you to enjoy at home. You probably find it online. But I wouldn't actually want to put in here because it's a little too scathing. But it's a great read. So on the cover of Green Book, there is a quote that just says, travel is fatal to prejudice. Now, I don't know that they meant that you could get killed when you're traveling, but clearly that could happen across the South particularly, but not just in the South. Also, there was one town in New York State, were sundown towns. In 1875, there was an act passed that would not allow discrimination against Blacks in hotels and or by cities or towns. That was thrown out in 1876, and in order to take advantage of that window, because they feared there was soon going to be a similar kind of act passed, towns all across the country passed sundown clauses, which meant that no Black was to be allowed to be seen in that town after sundown. If you were in that town, you were Black, you could be inside if you weren't going to be seen, but if you were traveling through, and there's an episode where that happens in the movie, if you were traveling through, you were at risk very seriously. And so towns quickly passed that, and they went all across the nation. But what my point is that if you're trying to travel someplace, you could get killed. None of us go anywhere that we think we're likely to get killed if we travel there. And if there is a potential for that, there are travel warnings issued, right? There are places in Mexico that if you decide to do your vacation there, well, that travel advisory really says, you know, this is a sundown town for you, right? It might not even be good at high noon, but take your risks, right? So we've got all kinds of ways to find out where we're safe. And we generally don't even have to check them out because we know we're going to places where everything is the same as it is here. It's just warmer, right? Because few of us go to the north for our vacations. So, unless you're a skier, I suppose. Not a lot of hills in the tundra. So, I'm wondering, and I want to ask you this, what's the difference between traveling in 1950 or 1960 for you or your family between then and now? There's a significant change that we may not really even have noticed. But when you're traveling with your family in the 1960s, 1930s, 1950s, you were on the road. Imagine yourself on the road. And where are you likely to stop? Gas station? Where? Cabins, okay. Roadside picnic areas. Scott's mom used to use the pressure cooker on the little cook stove. Did you say something?
Motel 6?
Was that back in the 60s? How long has it been around? Okay. Okay, so those of you who have stopped at a service center on the side of the road, what might you have expected there?
Washroom.
And what kind of state would they be in? Yeah, not very good. They'd be okay? Okay. We would stop at certain ones on the 401. We wouldn't stop at other ones because some of them were clean, some of them were filthy. You know, they were run by different people. But the big difference, I think, is that large corporations and obvious brands now own most of our travel experience. We stay in the same kind of hotels. We see Tim Hortons all the way across the country. I have this idea. I want to write a book where I travel from Newfoundland to British Columbia and I stop in Tim Hortons and I have conversations with everybody about what they believe, right? Haven't talked to my agent about that yet. Got to get up my courage. But anyway, but you can go from one side of the country to the other and find a Tim Hortons, right? That you know what to expect from it. You can find a McDonald's anywhere in North America and around the world now, and you know what you can expect from it. You look for a hotel and you have a card for Comfort Inns or something, so you look for a Comfort Inn. You know what to expect. It's all the same. So it's very hard for us to actually imagine or even remember the differences that we experienced when we went traveling before. And so the focus moment was to say, yeah, I travel, I go around, I see everything, but it's so sheltered what I see and what I engage with that the experience of travel isn't really traveling, right? It's really not getting to see the area around me. I don't have conversations with people who live there year round. I don't know where they eat most of the time. I wouldn't know where to go to find something to eat. That wasn't just something that was pretty much made the same way there as it is here. So that's one of the challenges I have around finding a place to travel, and one of the things that it convicted me of as I watched the movie. So here's Mark Twain's full quote. Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. And many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's lifetime. And I think that because of the expansion of branded food outlets and hotels, we can hold on to all of those things even if we travel the world, right? We can hold on to all of those things in Jerusalem. Stayed in the Hyatt. Had no idea what was going on outside the doors, right? That's where they booked us. That's where I stayed. Had a lovely cake. Thank you very much. Brought the cake home. They checked it to see if it was a bomb, but it was really just a cake. But, you know, we can dull ourselves to what's going on in the world. So the other reading that I did about Green Book, I did a lot of reading about the Green Book and how it was known. Every single black person in the States would have known it. It wouldn't have been a, you know, something they might come across. It was crucial for anyone going anywhere. And so everyone knew it and participated in that that project of feedback and enhancing it. How far north? Like we saw and we experienced them. Oh, no, they were driving this way and then they went down south. We watched them going that way. In the town in New York where they started, clearly, there was an integration. I mean, there was no segregation in New York, clearly, at that point in time. Dr. Stanley had a very prestigious apartment in a very prestigious location and clearly was well-to-do. He was accepted and revered in the musical world. And so there was, you know, he had privilege, right? And when they started to go on the trip, you could see these two things coming together, Tony Lip and Dr. Shirley, and they're very different, and they come together and they go on that road trip. But when they start heading south, does anyone remember where they first sort of ran into some trouble? Kentucky, I think so too. That's where they first ran into some issues. Stayed at a, they had to separate to be in separate hotels because Tony wasn't able to stay in the black hotel and Don wasn't able to stay in the white hotel, so they were in separate places, and then a situation arose. And then it got worse, like things got worse. The prejudice was worse, the response of people was worse, and it just, it got grueling in terms of the pain, and you watched the pain experienced. Until Don Shirley calls out and makes that heart-rending cry about how he's not accepted. He's not accepted in the black community. He's not accepted in the white community. And he's not even can't even be accepted as a man. And so who is he? And where does he belong? And that's a huge cry that comes out of him at one of the key moments in the movie. But the Green Book, as I said, there were places in New York that there were sundown towns, so one would think there would be places listed in New York. But how far north do you think the Green Book went? Yeah? Collingwood, Ontario. Yeah. Collingwood, Ontario. And Toronto. And Montreal. Not Toronto, Montreal. Montreal, Collingwood, Leamington, and Niagara Falls in Canada, the Canadian side. So we're watching this movie from the safe perspective, north of 49, or somewhere. We're not north 49, but you know what I mean. And we aren't in that perspective. We too have our histories, deeply ugly histories, right? And so we have to atone for some of those things as well, because they still happen in our communities today. There are still, in Nova Scotia, there are still many places where, you know, dumps are located alongside what have historically been predominantly black communities. And we think about it and we make changes sometimes, but we don't actually shake the ground up in order to make a change. So how do we meet our own prejudices? And I think that's what this movie is about meeting our own prejudices and learning about ourselves as we go. The two men in the car have conversations. It's very stiff to begin with. Tony clearly feels like he's being judged by Dr. Shirley, who clearly feels that he is superior to Tony in certain ways and doesn't want to engage with him too completely. And over the course of those 1,000 miles or however many it was, those edges rubbed off and they learned from one another. It was a significant learning. But people feel, those who have written about the movie, people feel that we're let off the hook far too easily if we're white and we're watching that movie. Because we're not considering what else was going on in the world at that time. And we're not, there's not always a happy ending that takes place. And so it was accused of being wrapped up in a white gauze, you know, so that we would feel good about the movie. And everybody who's seen it, they have the same reaction. It was a great movie. I loved it. Dealt with some difficult issues, but we loved it, right? But those difficult issues, because they're not dealt with, still carry on. We still have much to learn about our own prejudices. I kicked you in the teeth last week with what I talked about when we talked about If Beale Street Could Talk. And the week before, I wasn't much easier on you. This movie, I thought I could be really, it's really good. But I still feel the privilege that I have to move in the world in ways that protects me, that protects my perspective, that doesn't demand that I try to, okay, what kind of spices are in this? What? And you cooked it in what? I don't have to, you know, I don't have to worry about that stuff. I just go someplace where I can see what it is and get served what I want. Or I don't have to, as we used to on the 401 and still do many times in the States, I don't have to go back into the service center and say, if you think that providing that meets the need that you, the legal requirement for you to provide bathrooms for people, you are mistaken. Actually, the day I did that, I walked up to the bathroom, opened the door, and there was a young black man in there with absolutely no pants on. And I was horrified for him, but there was no lock on the door. So I strode back into the service center, and there's this whole lineup, and everybody moved out of the way and let me go straight to the counter. I was enraged that I had just humiliated this man horribly because of the poor quality of that bathroom. I didn't thank everybody who moved out of the way, but I'm sure they knew I appreciated it. So the message today, Scott gave in the Grounded Guide to Growing, sorry if you missed it, but the message is really that we need to check every moment of, oh, that feels good, and ask ourselves why it feels good. Sometimes we get to just bask in it because, damn, it feels good. But sometimes we need to ask questions, and sometimes we need to step outside our comfort zones. And sometimes we need to get into the grit of the location that we're visiting and not just stay in the, you know, the security-wrapped boundaries of the resort that we happen to be in. To get to know what's going on, to be moved. We hear all the time about, maybe not all the time, but we hear about celebrities who go and make the conditions in Haiti known around the world. And we hear about people from Puerto Rico who are, you know, I read a review on solar battery chargers from a guy in Puerto Rico who's been without power since the hurricane went through and is trying to get, I mean, I read it in a review. I had to, in a review, remember Puerto Rico is still totally screwed, right? So we have to continue to open ourselves in whatever way we can, to be present to not just the little group that we feel comfortable with, but the world that we feel uncomfortable with, and find reasons why and embrace who we are in relation to those reasons. And then perhaps, if possible, if we can, respond in some significant way. It's been a pleasure doing this year's Academy Awards series, and I finished a week early. I didn't do the math, So I suggested to Annie that maybe we just do a surprise movie for next week, and I just tell you about it now. But I thought instead that I'd ask you if we needed to do a movie. What, you want to watch the trailer now? Seriously. Okay, trailer. I forgot the trailer again. Ah! The trailer for Green Book, for the one I've just talked about. Anyway, what I'm going to ask you is to make some suggestions. So think about that if you can double, you know, multitask.
Yeah, some guy called over here, a doctor. He's looking for a driver. You interested?
I am not a medical doctor. I'm a musician. I'm about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South. What other experience do you have?
Public relations.
Do you foresee any issues in working for a black man?
You and the Deep South? There's going to be problems.
Tom, are you going to write me a letter?
No problems.
Tell me that don't smell good.
I've never had fried chicken in my life.
But they love the fried chicken.
You have a very narrow assessment of me, Tony.
Yeah, right? I'm good.
Be interacting with some of the wealthiest people in the country. It is my feeling that your diction could use some finessing.
Why are you breaking my balls?
Because you can do better, Mr. Balalonga.
Dear Dolores.
I saw Dr. Shirley play the piano. He's like a genius, I think.
Come on, take it easy.
I prefer not to get grease on my blanket.
Ooh, I'm gonna get grease on my blanket.
This gentleman says that I'm not permitted to dine here. I'm afraid not.
How does he smile and shake their hands like that?
Because it takes courage to change people's hearts.
What are you doing?
A letter.
May I? Dear Dolores, sometimes you remind me of a house. You know this is pathetic, right? Put this down. The distance between us is breaking my spirit. Falling in love with you was the easiest thing I have ever done. P.S. Kiss the kids. That's like clinging a cowbell at the end of Shostakovich's Seventh.
That's good.
It's perfect, Tony. Come on, yeah. You never win with violence. You only win when you maintain your dignity.
Your own people. You, Mr. Big Shot, doing concerts for rich people.
So if I'm not black enough, and if I'm not white enough, then tell me, Tony, what am I?
Anyone can sound like Beethoven. For your music, what you do, only you can do that.
What do we do about the bones?
We do this.
Pick it up, Tony.
Well, what ain't it anyway?
Pick it up.
Yeah, that was so good. So, if we were going to pick another movie, why don't we take some suggestions? Okay? The Upside? Okay? Okay, could we... Is it in theaters now or on Netflix?
It's in theaters.
Okay. The Upside? People keen with that? Okay, let's do The Upside for next week. All right? You don't get to say anything about it. No talk about The Upside. Anyway, thank you. It's been a great time. I'm just going to do this now. Up you get. I don't know what the everybody standing up thing is. I'm sure there's a liturgical purpose to it. I'm just helping you get out the door. Got the first step taken care of. But the second step is always the hardest one. And that's the one where you transition from a place where you're known and held, where you can say what you want to say and know that someone will either engage you in conversation about it or just embrace you, where love is what we live with here in this place. And believe me, that's extraordinary even in church. So the next step is the hard one, and that's when you go from this place of shelter into a world of people you don't know, whose fears are strong and hard and can't be appeased, whose stories are so deep you may never, ever hear them, but you see them played out. You see them played out in their lives, and you may not understand, but you have a heart big enough to hold. So take those dangerous steps towards others' hearts and wrap them with yours in whatever way they give you permission to do, and help make this world a place where we might travel one to the other and have safe passage along the way. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.